Seoul with, in collaboration with DJ Balasubramanian, in a paper that came out at the end of the last summer. And then more recent work I'll just mention in passing, Fernando Quevedo will talk more about the joint work with Fernando and Joe Conlon, Fernando's student at Cambridge. So the idea of this talk is to tell you a little bit about, we've already heard about the wonders of considering fluxes in string compactifications. And we had a little bit of a review of the flux compactifications. I realized that someone like myself, need to convert to the more modern technology, giving PowerPoint presentations, but maybe for next conference. So I'll start with a review of flux compactifications. We've heard a little bit about it in the context of Calabi-Yau compactifications. And the main point of this talk and this work is that it's important to consider the stringy corrections to the n equal to 1 Kähler potential, because it qualitatively changes the shape of the scalar potential. Although you might have thought that you started out or could consider compactifications in which you, if you stabilize the volume at large values, that you wouldn't have to worry about alpha prime corrections. But that's not true. And it's in particular possible to find non-supersymmetric vacua if you consider the part that comes from the flux superpotential to be of order 1, or actually larger than order 1 in this more recent work that Fernando will talk about. And this gives one application that I'll mention towards the end is that this gives a very simple mechanism for solving the, well, not really solving, but addressing the cosmological constant problem, in which the corrected cosmological constant is much, much smaller than the Gravitino mass that you get from the supersymmetry breaking. OK, so it's already been mentioned a little bit, but let me just put up the generic slide for a talk of this nature. We're interested in n equal to 1 compactifications down to 4 dimensions. And the context we're looking at is type 2B on Calabi-Yau antifolds, or more generally F theory on some Calabi-Yau fourfold X. And we're turning on Schwarz, and Ramon three-form fluxes, and that generates a superpotential. It's the Gukova-Witten superpotential, where omega here is the holomorphic three-form on the Calabi-Yau manifold, which I'm going to denote by M, the underlying Calabi-Yau manifold in this original type 2B compactification. There is a tadpole condition that one has to satisfy. And what we're interested in here is the scalar potential. The scalar potential has various pieces. There's the Kähler potential, K, which depends on the Kähler moduli through the volume of the Calabi-Yau manifold. It depends on the dilaton. The complexified dilaton. And then, of course, it depends on the complex structure moduli through this volume here, omega, or the integral over omega, omega bar. Now, what's interesting is that we have two terms here in the potential, and we're summing over all the possible moduli, which include the complex structure dilaton and the Kähler structure. And the effective modulus on the Kähler side, which is that part of the story that we're going to be focused with, is a four cycle, which you can think of as the derivative of the volume with respect to the two cycle modulus, the what normally referred to as the flat coordinate in the special geometry that underlies this. So the volume here is, at this point, is just a cubic in terms of these flat coordinates. And this is, of course, we're ignoring any higher corrections that we will eventually consider. So that's the general setting. So as we are now including fluxes in the story, we will generically freeze the complex structure in the dilaton moduli by simply imposing the supersymmetry conditions. So we have a that dw with respect to the complex structure moduli and the dilaton modulus, there of course is the same number of equations that you have to satisfy for as there are moduli. So generically, with some choice of fluxes here, we will freeze the complex structure and the dilaton. Now, that will then you just have to evaluate what the superpotential is for those given values that you found at the minimum, and that gives some, in general, some non-zero value that I will refer to as W naught. Now, of course, we also have a supersymmetry condition from the Kähler moduli, and because at this point the superpotential it only depends on the dilaton and the and the complex structure moduli, that means that there's no partial derivative on W, and you only have the connection term. And hence, if you want to satisfy this condition, you either have to set W naught equal to zero or d rho I k equal to zero. Now, we'll come back to this in a second. If we now just rewrite, having already satisfied the dW with respect to the complex structure of the dilaton moduli, then the scalar potential simplifies, and it will only now have a piece that depends on this basically the absolute value squared of d rho I w, and we know what that is. I just plugged it in this result here. Now it turns out that for the cubic nature of k, k being roughly the log of these t I t j t k, when you work it all out, this factor here, this term cancels with the 3, and you're always going to get a so-called no-scale potential. Notice that this was independent of what happened to the actual value of W naught, but because we want to, let's say, consider a supersymmetric minimum, then we simply satisfy this equation by just choosing W naught to be zero. And that does not give any, so hence we have a flat potential, and there's no condition, this little cartoon here, no condition on a typical modulus here, which I just refer to as rho. Okay. Now, it's at this point we've only considered the classical part of the superpotential, but there can be non-perturbative contributions to the superpotential, and this was considered in this now famous paper by Patrick Kalish, Linda, and Trivedi. But we can also consider perturbative and in principle also non-perturbative corrections to the Kähler potential. And the idea of this work that I've been doing with my collaborators is to combine these two effects and to see what that implies for the resulting scalar potential. So once again, here's the brief review. What happens is that you're now going to consider including some non-perturbative effects. They can be of deep D3 brain type instantons, D3 brains wrapping some force cycle, hence the volume of the force cycle being represented by this complexified modulus rho k. And or alternatively, you could also have a gauge unit condensation. The only thing that changes is that this factor ak here is either just 2 pi or 2 pi over some integer. The one loop determinant that is, as far as we know, it's not. It can be zero, or it can be non-zero. And for since we to not really say anything more about that, we're just going to assume that it's equal to one. There are some work that I'm doing with Peter Meyer, trying to look at explicit calculations in terms of some F theory, in which you could actually compute what these the complex structure dependent one loop determinant. But for this talk, I'm just going to, and for this work that I've been doing, that I'm reporting about here, we're just going to take this to be over order one. Okay. Now, if you add those kinds of non-perturbative effects, the potential, rather than being just a straight line at b equal to zero, now has this non-trivial feature that there is a supersymmetric ADS minimum. So you have to satisfy, dW now for the Kähler moduli. We'll look different because you have a Kähler moduli dependence in your superpotential. And the idea of the KKLT was to, okay, we are having a supersymmetric ADS vacuum. That's interesting in its own right, but we can add some non-trivial D term, for example, by adding anti-D3 brains. We could lift this because that contribution will go like a power law in the volume and hence will dominate at large volume, but you still have this non-trivial barrier and the non-trivial vacuum. And so this allows then for finding in these types of models the sitter vacuum, metastable the sitter vacuum. There were certain assumptions about, you know, the existence of these geometric objects, what they had to satisfy in order to at least have a chance of contributing to the superpotential, such as that first of all, we have to assume that all of the Kähler moduli contribute to the superpotential, because if there's a term for Kähler modulus and that Kähler modulus does not appear here, then we'll simply not stabilize it. And there are examples of such models worked out by Douglas Deneff and Florian. You also have to assume something about the this force cycle has to satisfy certain geometric properties, at least in some cases this is a sufficient condition, but there are also models people have considered in which the arithmetic genus is actually not equal to one, and still one can explicit calculations show that it will contribute. It simply has to do with the number of zero modes, and including fluxes changes this picture a little bit. But all that I want to use now is that there are models in which these kinds of non-perturbative superpotentials can be added to the classical flux piece, and then one gets this nice ADS vacuum that can be lifted to the sitter vacuum. Okay, so this was the non-perturbative correction to W, and we want to build on the work by Becker, Hawk, and Lewis, who, not in the context of flux compactification, just in terms of orientifold, from n equal 1 orientifold compactification, show that if you also include higher order terms in the 10-dimensional action, such as the r to the fourth term, which is an alpha prime cubed correction, then k is not just log of the volume of the Calabi-Yau. There's also a alpha prime cubed dependent piece, which interestingly also depends on the dilaton. So before, if you remember, the Kähler potential had was additive in the logarithmic terms. There was a log for the Kähler modulus, dilaton, and the complex structure. Now there's an interesting mixing here. And what this amounts to is that if you now compute for some constant W naught that you obtain in some particular way, not necessarily through a flux compactification, then the effective scalar potential does not vanish as it did if we had not included this correction, but it has a power law fall off. And if you look at large volumes, then the numerator goes like b squared, a curly b squared, which is the volume of the Calabi-Yau, and the denominator goes like b cubed. And since e to the k goes like 1 over the volume squared, this fall off here for large volumes is like 1 over the volume cubed. But even so, you know, this is just a fall off, and, you know, of course, even if, you know, my drawing may indicate there might be a little bumps and wiggles, that's just because I can't draw. There are no minima here, so you would just run out to infinity. But the point is that we now want to combine these effects. That's right. We want to combine these effects, but before I do that, someone might ask at the back of the lecture hall that, well, okay, so you included this alpha prime cubed term due to the fact that there are to the fourth corrections in the 10-dimensional string action. Well, what about other corrections? After all, BBHL did not consider this in the context of flux compactification. So you might think now that there are other corrections to the Kähler potential, or effectively to the scalar potentials. And although we have not, it's at least as far as we know, it's not known how to compute these corrections, there's an argument by Green and Sinha, colleagues of Fernando and Joe at Cambridge, how those kinds of terms may look like. So since we now have a non-trivial flux, well, let's just go down to the bottom of the potential, but the bottom of the screen here, the standard contribution due to the flux contribution to the potential goes like 1 over the volume squared, because just the fact that we have a flux superpotential means that there's a contribution now that goes like e to the Kähler potential, and the Kähler potential goes like log of the volume, and there's a factor of 2 there, so that's why you get 1 over volume squared. That's from a term of the type g squared in your scalar potential. But now you could imagine that you have higher order terms, and in particular, there's, according to Green and Sinha, there's a first non-trivial term would be g to the 8, which is an alpha prime cubed correction. So this is sort of the analog of the r to the 4th correcting the Einstein-Hilbert action. Well, how would that kind of a term look like when we consider it in 4 dimensions? Well, you have to look at how g squared scales with the volume. Now, what is g? G is the flux through some 3 cycles, so g squared will scale like the volume of the total Calabi-Yau, or 1 over the volume of the total Calabi-Yau. If one just computes what the 4-dimensional piece of the scalar potential looks like by the usual kind of arguments, one gets a term like 1 over the volume, and then now we have alpha prime cubed times g to the 8. Now, since g squared scales like 1 of the volume, g to the 8 scales like the 1 of the volume to the 4th power, and hence the contribution from a g to the 8 term scales like 1 over the volume to the 5th. And we should compare that with what I was just saying a minute ago about the r to the 4th term. It's also on both of them are alpha prime cubed correction, but we're down an additional powers of the volume here, 1 of the volume squared compared to the r to the 4th term. So at this point, even if we don't know explicitly how to include this in terms of some effective action, what I'm going to do is simply ignore this term. It would be interesting to compute it, but we believe that if we're at large enough volume, where large is, you know, not much larger than 1 in string units, then we're still going to be okay. You mean also at, I mean, some mixture like alpha prime cube where you had, let's say, r squared times whatever, you know, the appropriate power of g. Yes, you could imagine that you, well, so this is where I must say that I'm, my limited knowledge about, you know, what kinds of other terms that you could have. Yes. Right. Well, they would have the same effect that as alpha prime cubed, and so then the question is now, because you see every time you have a g term included, you're down by g squared. G would always come as g squared. You're down by a factor of the volume. So I think that if you start combining terms, you know, where you combine some powers of r with powers of g squared, I still think that you're going to be fine. But this is something that, since we don't know explicitly how to compute these terms, the argument is not completely watertight. I was just pointing this out to say that if you consider the purely flux contribution to the scalar potential, then at least that term will be down compared to the term that we are considering. Okay. And they're all going to be down by further powers. That's right. That's right. Okay. So the point is that we want to consider these corrections and include the non-perturbative superpotential correction. And what do we get? Well, we're still going to have the non-trivial part of the effect coming from the non-perturbative superpotential. But then, because at large volume, the superpotential term contributing to the scalar potential is going to be going to zero because it's an exponential much faster than the power law fall off of the alpha prime correction to the Kähler potential. So at the end of the day, you are going to approach for a generic direction in the moduli space, you're going to approach zero from above. So you actually have a barrier. And this is one of the main features of including the alpha prime correction. You're not going to change the structure of the supersymmetric vacuum here, but you're going to have a non-trivial barrier out at large values. So you might say, well, okay, it doesn't change the structure of the vacuum, so what's the point of all of this? Well, the question is, how are you actually solving the supersymmetry conditions? And we already assumed that the complex structure of the dilaton conditions are taken care of. And so now we want to solve these what are now non-trivial conditions, d rho k, where these are the complexified four-cycle moduli of w equal to 0. Now, if you write down what this equation is, it's including the alpha prime term. What's important is to note now that we have a 1 over t, where t is this two-cycle modulus in the denominator. So you might think, okay, what's happening as I'm changing my value of w naught, kklt, in order to find the supersymmetric solutions, require that generically the w naught was very, very small. You might say, well, as I'm increasing w naught, I can always find a solution by simply taking a smaller and smaller value of my two-cycle modulus here. You know, as I'm increasing this here, I can compensate for that by taking a smaller value of t. Well, then we have to use that we know something about the moduli, the sort of quote-unquote moduli space of the Kähler moduli. And that is that we're actually not allowed to, if we want to stay in the sort of geometric phase of the Kähler cone, we're not allowed to go to basically zero volume without, you know, having to, you know, include many, many further corrections to the Kähler potential. There would be instanton corrections. There would be these higher order alpha prime corrections. So we're simply going to say that there's some cutoff here that one naively can see in terms of the original Becker, Hawk, and Lewis calculation. In fact, the potential blows up when the volume becomes of the order of C. So if we're now restricting ourselves to the volume being greater than C, that means that the volume being made up of roughly speaking, the cubic pieces of T, that as T is going to zero in order to solve this equation, we would no longer be inside the geometric part of the Kähler cone. So you might say, well, that's fine. We're simply going to, we can't solve the problem, but simply that may still be a supersymmetric solution. Okay, that may very well be the case, and we can find that supersymmetric solution. But it turns out that there is a non-supersymmetric solution now if W naught, the flux contribution, is simply larger than some maximum value, which you can determine in toy models. And that maximum value is usually of order 1. So it simply means that as we're trying to solve this equation, when W naught is larger than this value, there is no solution, at least in this geometric part of the Kähler cone. But there's still a minimum. It turns out that there's a minimum, which is, to start with, non-supersymmetric ADS. As you're increasing W naught further beyond this, you're lifting the potential little by little, and at some point you can tune it such that you get to a Minkowski solution. And then as you increase it even further, you can get the De Sitter solution. So the location of this, the value of the potential at the minimum can go from negative 0 up to positive. Now, of course, if W naught is very large, then the potential that you would get would simply not have any minima at all. And this is not surprising, because that's exactly the situation that Becker and et al. Considered. Namely, if W naught is very, very large, greater than some W max twiddle here, then simply the flux part of the superpotential is going to contribute over the instanton part, the non-perturbative part. And you're just going to have a Pavlov fall-off and no moduli being stabilized. But there's a region here where W naught is of order one, in which you can stabilize the moduli either in terms of an ADS, Minkowski, and the sitter. So the point is that we've found a region in this W naught flux potential sort of space where we're imagining that we're allowing W naught to take any values. That's of course not quite true, but since this W naught is really a discrete values depending on what kind of flux that we have considered. What's interesting is that if we allow for these larger values of W naught, larger than what KKLT originally considered, we can still find interesting structures in this scalar potential. So since I think about to run out of time, I'm just going to mention very quickly this idea of how this can be applied to the cosmological constant. So so once we've broken supersymmetry, then of course we have to include higher order loop corrections. Just think of this as an effective field theory now, to the classical value of lambda. Now, if lambda was equal to zero, then depending on particular model, with some model-dependent coefficient C here, lambda one loop will depend on m lambda square, the gravitino mass. And for lambda smaller than zero, then in principle one should be able to compute this. We just haven't had the strength or the knowledge to do it. But all I want to use here is the fact that when we have a supersymmetric ADS vacuum, then we know, of course, that the correction has to be zero. And as I'm starting to go away from the supersymmetric ADS vacuum, then this here is where I can parametrize the amount by which I'm away from the supersymmetric ADS vacuum by just taking the difference between the absolute value of W naught and this maximum value of W for which I had still a supersymmetric ADS vacuum. So if I'm parametrizing what happens to my my classical cosmological constant, it's going to increase and become zero at some point and then be positive as I'm increasing epsilon. That was just I'm just basically here plotting the location of each of the minima as I'm increasing W naught and hence increasing epsilon. Now what happens to one loop? Well, at epsilon equal to zero, lambda one loop, the correction is zero and then it increases. So if I just then try to see what happens if I add the one loop and the lambda to each other, well, there will be some value of W naught for which these classical piece and the one loop piece are roughly equal to zero. Namely, the form of the potential will be classically that of having an ADS with this characteristic bump that follows through the alpha prime corrections. And then when I add the one loop corrected term, then because of the bump, assuming that the corrections are not too large, then I'm just going to be lifted up to roughly getting zero here. Now, of course, there will be higher order corrections, and you would have to include them order by order. But at least this is one way at least one loop finding a cosmological constant equal to zero. And it relies on not directly finding a Minkowski solution, which we sort of traditionally thought of, that's the way we're getting cosmological constant. But it starts with a non-supersymmetric ADS, and then the corrections basically lift to us. And this has also been mentioned in other contexts, such as M theory by Fabio Acciaria and I think other people as well, using this idea of the quantum corrections taking care of the cosmological constant problem. So to conclude, what I've tried to stress is that perturbative corrections are important to the Kähler potential. Of course, that's the only place where perturbative corrections are play a role, because there are none to the superpotential. And I didn't have time to talk about this, but Fernando is going to talk about the fact that there exist special directions in this sort of moduli space in which one can find non-supersymmetric ADS vacua, which exist at very large volume, also for large values of the superpotential being, you know, greater than one. So the particular examples that I had in mind, you know, just simple one-parameter examples, things get much more complicated when you consider maybe more realistic multi-parameter examples. And the work I've done with Fernando and Joe and BJ, more recent work, shows that one such feature. I discussed the, you know, how this has can have implications of cosmological constant, and you can imagine that instead of looking at description of the universe as of today, we could also try to apply this to inflation, and especially when you have a very flat potential, even the smallest correction, an alpha prime correction, could have large effects to inflation. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Yes.
Yeah. Well, so this Fernando will talk about this more, I think, if I understand correctly, that the special direction is simply a direction in which, you know, if you have two or more moduli, then you can say that one of the moduli is, let's say, instead of just growing large with the volume, like all the moduli would grow large with the volume, you go in a direction in which one of the moduli, say, is logarithmic with the volume. So you could still have a large volume, but one of the moduli being parametrically smaller. And then the non-perturbative piece in the superpotential then can have a power law fall off. So you can trade those terms, the alpha prime contribution to the scalar potential with this particular non-perturbative term coming from the superpotential.